Hey, Headlampers, welcome to the Headlamp Hour podcast. I'm your host, Nate Jukes, and today we have a special conversation with Lauren Peretz, a trail runner based in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And Lauren recently won a golden ticket to the Western States Endurance Run recently at Black Canyon 100K just a couple weeks ago. After a couple years of trying in several different races, she finally got that elusive ticket. And we talk about it here on the podcast today. We also talk about her background, where she's from, how she met her husband, life with her two children, and how she's a gynecologist and how she balances that with her love of trail running. So I hope you enjoy the conversation today with Lauren Peretz. All right, Lauren Peretz, welcome to the Headlamp Hour. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, I am so excited for this conversation. I didn't meet you personally at Black Canyon, but I was there, you were there, and I'm excited to talk about your race that you had there. We'll get into it for sure, but I just really admired you, and this is the first I had really heard of you there. I know. And then I realized I should have already known your name, but anyways, I'm excited to meet you and talk with you and kind of, debrief your race, but also just get to know you better as a person. So thanks for being here.
Of course. Yeah. I would say it was a good day, but it was kind of a weird day, as you know, kind of a weird starting, a weird, I guess, middle, and then a strange end for me. So it was a weird day, but glad it was out there.
Well, I want to go back first to, well before the race, through airport security. I heard that you had an interesting, story there trying to get your fuel through there. So yeah. can you tell us what happened there?
Yeah. So I should say that every race I go to, I seem to always have an issue going through security. It's always something. And I'm usually having it like full bags, like, you know, opened up and searched and et cetera, et cetera. And so I kind of knew it was coming. I should have guessed that the Precision 90 carbs, I should have known that those are over the limit that should go through. But I think just in the process of not wanting to check anything, so nothing got lost, I wanted to have everything with me. And so I packed a couple of those to go through. And of course I get, you know, my luggage goes through and it gets diverted to go get searched, and they found one of the Precision 90 carb packs, so the bigger ones. And she's like, you're either going to have to throw it away, or I can escort you out of security and you can consume it, and then you can go back through security. I'm like, that thing was like $5. I'm not just throwing it away. And so I was like, yeah, I'm obviously going to leave and go back through security. And so I did. And I chugged that thing in like 30 seconds or less, cause I didn't want to then miss my plane. So I could go back through security. And I was like, I guess that's a challenge of how much carb I can take and how quickly. And so ran through, security again, and then got to our gate and everything was fine. But yeah, I had to be escorted out so I could chug a 90 carb Precision gel pack.
That's hilarious. That's so funny. Yeah, I'm sure you got to your gate very quickly after that, then, with all that fuel.
Yeah, right? I felt jazzed. I was ready to go. And I remember during Javelina, my girlfriend and I were trying to figure out what to do. My dog wants to join the party. My girlfriend was like, don't eat this all at once. She's like, consume this, but like, you know, do it through this. So I'm thinking that as I'm going through security, I'm like, oh, this may be bad on a flight. This might not go so well, but I did okay. I didn't have any issues. So, you know, we're
great.
Good.
Well, yeah. Gut training all the way to the end.
I know. And then I was freaking out, cause I thought like, oh, I could just find, and I couldn't find Precision. And it wasn't at the expo. So I was kind of panicking that I didn't have everything I needed. And I'm not a huge fan of carrying a ton because I just feel like I either can't find it or whatever, or trying to open up one and dropping one. So I like the big pack. So I was kind of freaking out. I didn't have it. And I was really lucky. I ran into the Precision people there and they were very kind to restock me. So that was awesome.
That's so cool. That's awesome. This is not a paid sponsorship by Precision, but I use Precision as well. I have a friend who is sponsored by them, Hayden Hawks, and he swears by it, and I really enjoy it. I actually haven't tried the 90 gram gels though. I just usually pop the 30s, but
they're super nice because they also have a reclosable top. So if you do half, you can do half and then like actually close it, put it back, and then do more later. So that's nice about
there
it too,
go.
As opposed to.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, with that out of the way, I wanted to make sure we covered that. The opening question that I ask everybody on this podcast is, what roles define your identity and shape who you are as a person, Lauren?
Oh, so, I guess, first and foremost, I'm, mom and wife, been married, 14 years. And I have two, not so little kids anymore, 8 and 11. And so, being that role, I guess, is part of my identity. Other part is, being a now gynecologist. Only I used to be a obstetrician and gynecologist, but I just dropped obstetrics. I think I delivered my last baby in July. And so being a gynecologist, I just love women's health, being able to be the person who diagnoses, but also be the surgeon who treats a lot of the kind of just, you know, medical issues with female health. So I guess those are my two big outside of running things that kind of define who I am.
That's so cool. And I want to dive into kind of each one of those, starting with family. So how and where did you meet your husband? And what's his name?
Brad, his name is Brad. We actually met in medical school. And this sounds, so cliche, but I'm a year older than him. And I was actually the TA in anatomy. I'm that like typical. Yeah. Except for I was not into him at that time. He was kind of like the know-it-all, like the super smart kid. And I was the TA who was just there to help you pass the class. And so him asking all the questions, I'm like, dude, here's the answers you need for the test. Like, stop asking me these questions. So he was really annoyed me. So it wasn't until later, I think there was like, you know, evening out. And then I think a ski trip put on through the med school not in class, that we actually met and actually started getting along and then started dating. That was 2007 in med school is when we started dating.
So was he asking all those questions because he kind of liked you, or because he legitimately was had a bunch of questions?
Yeah. I was like, he'll probably never admit it, but he also, when I make fun of him, he's like, I was just trying to learn more. And I was like, oh, stop it.
Right.
So he's never admitted. That's why I said it.
That's so cool. And where are you from? Where did you grow up? And, you know, maybe a little bit about what about the location or environment that you grew up in, whether you know, parents, siblings, friends, et cetera, helped you grow into the person and runner you are today?
Yeah. So I grew up, both my parents are from Long Island. So that's where all my family is. But my dad got a job in Michigan. So kind of Lower Peninsula, real boring, real ugly, no offense, part of Michigan, just flat and no mountains or anything, part of Michigan. So grew up there. But my parents, my dad, I should say, mostly is a very avid skier, and that's what his passion was. So we came out to Colorado every year, two weeks in the summer to go biking and hiking. And I think we did 14ers when I was, I think my first one was, the duo. I'm going to blank on it. It'll come to me later. Anyways. And so we were out here doing all that kind of stuff. And then the winter come out to ski. So even though grew up in Michigan, was coming out to Colorado, multiple times a year. And I think my dad just being super active, my mom being super active and going on, you know, all this hiking and biking and doing that kind of stuff kind of got me going, but it was more hiking. And I remember the first time I did Quandary, somebody ran past and I was like, oh, you can do this faster? That sounds better. I didn't even realize that was even a thing until I was out here one summer and some guy ran past and I was like, that looks awesome. But it was always so intimidating. But I kind of grew up as a gymnast, which I think has actually really helped me as a runner. Did that until I was like 13 and then, you know, had back injuries and wrist injuries. And I was like, I can't keep doing this. So then played soccer. I'd always played soccer. So got more into soccer. And I actually joined cross country my senior year of high school purely to get in shape for soccer because I had made varsity my junior year and sat the bench. So I was like, senior year, I'm going to do cross country. I'm going to get in shape so I can actually play varsity. And then ended up doing really well and was like, forget soccer. I'm just going to stick with cross country. And then from there, went to college. I was hedging my bets. I was like, I'm never going to make anything of myself as a runner. So I will go academic. So I picked a school, a D3 school where I could be a student who also happened to run as opposed to a runner who happened to go to school. And that's undergrad at Kalamazoo College. And then in med school and residency, didn't do a bunch of running. So it wasn't until I graduated residency and then we moved out here right at a residency. And that's when I started running again. And then you can't help but run trails while you're out here just because there's most of the runs. I started mostly, you know, doing road races and then dabbled in a little short trail. And then from there, increased up to longer and longer distances. I don't know if that answers the question.
No, it does perfectly. Yeah, that was a great synopsis. I think there were elements in there that probably a lot of people can relate to, like, you know, joining cross country to get in shape for soccer.
You seem
to be like an athlete, you know, all around with gymnasts and soccer. And then also sounds like, you know, your parents kind of instilled a love for the outdoors in you with coming out to Colorado and hiking. Is that kind of why you chose to settle down in Colorado then, is because of those childhood memories coming out here a lot?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just remembering how beautiful it was out here in the sun. The biggest thing, I'm going to offend Michigan listeners and I feel bad, but Michigan is so dreary, like from, gosh, probably October, November till March. It's dark and it's dreary and it's cold. You never see the sun. And I just wanted to be like, I got to go someplace that doesn't make me so sad. The mountains, access to the mountains, but also just the sunshine, I think were the two biggest things that, and when we were looking for jobs, we kind of joked that like a strip of two countries straight down, whether it was Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, like anywhere in that area, if it had mountains and sun, we were in. But my parents moved out here. My brothers both moved out here. I have an older and a younger brother. So I'm a middle child and the only girl, and they moved out here. So, it was just kind of like, that's where family was too, which is super helpful with you know, kids to have family close. So, yeah. So it's kind of those things where we love the state, love everything about it. Met all those like outside activity goals that we wanted. And then having family here kind of sealed the deal.
Perfect. Awesome. And are you in Boulder then, or?
I am in Colorado Springs. So I'm actually south of Denver. Yeah.
That's great. Awesome. I guess kind of on the other side of the Rockies from you then, in Southern Utah. So
yeah. Okay.
Awesome. All right. So let's talk a little bit about work. So you mentioned that you used to be an OBGYN, but then you dropped, OB and now you're just a GYN or a gyn, or gynecologist, however you want to say it. First of all, can you clear up kind of the difference between all two or three of those? Like what's the difference between OB, a GYN and an OBGYN?
Yeah. So, I mean, coming out of residency, or coming out of med school, OBGYN is that's what you go into. There's no way to do any, like either one without doing both. So your residency is in both obstetrics. Obstetrics is anything relating to pregnancy. And then gynecology is anything related to just women's health in general, or specific to the reproductive system, the female reproductive system, is gynecology. So obviously those have intersections where they have combination, but training is in both. So in both delivering babies, managing pregnancies, complications of pregnancies, you know, even infertility into that regard. And then also as far as, you know, from puberty all the way to postmenopausal and all the complications therein is the gynecology part. And so you get trained in all of it. Generally speaking, it's unless you do a fellowship. So you go on after residency, specifically trained into gyne-oncology or urogynecology, maybe reproductive endocrinology and infertility, you're going to be a generalist, or you're going to go into more maternal fetal medicine, in which case you're going to do only high risk pregnancies. So you're kind of going to do both. And usually once you get more advanced in your career, you're able to kind of drop obstetrics. That's the one with the not so amazing schedule. I've never, delivering babies is fun, and you know, being part of that is part of a woman's life, and getting to know them and, you know, being there for that whole process is really fun, especially when you deliver like their second or third baby. That's always super fun. But it's also the nights, weekends, and holidays where you're working, you know, 96 hour shifts and you're up. Usually I was on call once. I worked 24 hours on Mondays. And then I was in a call group. So once every 6 to 7 weeks, I worked Friday through Monday morning. And it was just draining. Yeah. Like,
you mean not all babies are born between 9 and 5 then?
No, I mean, I really wish they would. It would really be kind for me in my life if they would follow a schedule, but no, they really like 3 a.m. That's like their prime. Yeah. Or like 10 p.m. So they like really like either end of the evening, just to make sure I'm up late and up early. But it's just, it was hard. It's hard as you get older. It's hard to maintain relationships with your children, with your family, and not be just a grumpy jerk. It's hard to train at a level that I wanted to and be on and off these schedules, or sometimes, like I always say, it was like mini little speed workout, because I'd be on a run, I get called to go in for delivery, and I had to like race back to the car, race to the hospital, like delivering babies in my running clothes. And so it was just harder for life and for any sort of serious running. So I had a very long, convoluted series of not so amazing things at work that led to basically where I was an opportunity to say, like, if I'm going to continue this job, I get to drop obstetrics and I will stay, and kind of had that ability. And so therefore, in July, I was able to actually do that.
Wow. Yeah. So that was fairly recent, you know, less than a year ago. And so, thanks for, that was one of the questions that I was going to, you know, ask you, because this podcast is called the Headlamp Hour. So that's a nod to the fact that, you know, lots of us as trail runners have other obligations, work and family and so forth. And we're doing our runs during that Headlamp Hour often. And we have to make decisions about priorities and life scheduling and work and all that. So that fits perfect. Another question I wanted to ask you about that. And I think that, you know, I've heard you allude to this on, I think, the Plucky Not Perfect podcast, of how you got into trail running and ultra running, is that, you know, doctor life, especially some doctors like an OB, OBGYN, kind of have to thrive off like sleep deprivation,
right,
just like you might in an ultra. And there was a recent article by Abby Levine on Outside Online. I think you saw it. And it talked about the recent success of some of these doctor parents, like Rachel Drake at Black Canyon, Justin Grunwald at Tarawera, and then you at Black Canyon as well. And the author said, there's something about ultras that's attractive to people who have undergone years of sleep deprivation through residency.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
right?
Talk about that for a second. Is that true? And do you find that that resonates with you as you got into trail running?
Yeah. I mean, what came first, right? The chicken or the egg? Do I like it? Because I have had this training in how to do it. Or is the reason I picked this career is because I also like this? I don't know. Right. But yeah, I mean, I always semi-joke that I could go from asleep to a C-section in under like 3 minutes. There's something about being able to turn yourself on and off that you're, you know, you go through, I guess, what, 2 years of more clinical medicine and then 4 years of residency that's just training you how to thrive off of, you know, not so great conditions. Just kind of that relentless forward motion is all you can really do. Like, you got to keep going. There's no one else on. You got to, you know, keep seeing the next patient. There's no other option. And not giving yourself that option, right? Like, there, you can't stop, right? People are depending on you. Similar, I suppose, in a run, right? You can't stop. You got to get to the end. And just not giving yourself that option, or not even thinking that's an option, maybe that training has done over the years. So there's probably some component of that's what I thrive off of, and that's why I've kind of gone this way, but also that it's trained me, right? Like, to be able to just keep going even when every part of you doesn't want to or feels like you can't. It's just not an option. You gotta keep going forward. Even if it's not the prettiest of things, you just got to keep going.
Yeah,
so.
definitely a lot of overlap there, it sounds like. So that's really cool. Thank you for taking us through that.
Yeah.
I had another question for you. So obviously, you know, you're busy, and hopefully you're less busy now that you're not delivering babies at 3 a.m. But
yeah,
you know, as runners, as competitive athletes, we often see other competitive athletes doing things that we might think we should be doing to get better, to get stronger, mm-hmm. to get faster. So is there anything that like comes to mind that you feel like you should be doing as far as improving your running? Like, maybe it's more strength, mobility, stretching, sauna, cold plunges, diet, et cetera.
Yeah.
But you feel like you don't necessarily have the time to do because of other obligations. So that's the first part of the question. And then the second part would be, if you're not doing some of those things, then how do you kind of deal with that? Like, trying not to compare yourself to others, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's hard, right? I mean, I think as a working parent who's trying to be semi-successful in any other endeavor, right, it's all about like priorities. I think there's probably a lot of us who do better when we're almost more busy, and that when I have a lot of free time, I end up doing nothing. Like, I was thinking, my kids and husband went away for like a week, and I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna have all this stuff done. I'm gonna run, I'm gonna stretch, I'm gonna do this. And I did like absolutely nothing. But when I have like, all right, I have to start running at this time and be done by this time so I can get home, I can maybe squeak 20 minutes of weight training in while I ask my husband to make me breakfast, and then I will jump in the shower and I have to be in the car because you got to get to the soccer game or the gymnastics meet at this time, and you get it done, as opposed to like, oh, I'll get it done and I'll do it later. So there's that, like, if you have limited time, you're going to be very regimented and very kind of efficient with your time. And so the biggest thing I've been trying to get in is stretching. Now that I'm getting older, is more and more important. And then strength training, again, you know, just in general being good for you, but especially as I age, you know, muscle is not as easily maintained. And so trying to get weights in, I keep a set of weights in my office so I can, like, you know, if I go straight from running to my office, I can shower there and then do some quick weights before first patient's ready. And so trying to sneak it in when I can, feeling like I probably do not as much as I should if I get it in once or twice a week, you know, it's really killing it. And then stretching, like, stretching and eating are probably my two biggest issues. And that if I run out of time, it's not infrequent, well, I'll you know, like get to the office, try to squeak in 20 minutes of some sort of strength. And then my first patient's ready. And all of a sudden it's 10:30 and I haven't eaten breakfast. I haven't eaten anything since I finished running. And so trying to, okay, I got to get more protein in. I got to, you know, do these recovery things. And like, that's where I probably am really lacking just because I don't have time. So trying to like adapt to that, like, I don't know, I put like, I call it my horchata latte. I have like the horchata recovery mix and I put it in my coffee. And so before I run, scoop it into my coffee. And then when I get back, I have ready for me my recovery like horchata protein mix in my coffee. And I can drink that as I drive to the office. And then when I get to the office, right, trying to sneak in a touch of weight training or trying to sneak in a touch of stretching as I'm like actively, you know, doing that while I'm showering and putting on makeup and getting dressed. And so trying to like sneak it into those times, but there's so much stuff where I'm like, I feel like I'm flailing at most of the things I should be doing in order to get better, or I don't know, or is that maybe just enough? I think the comparison game is hard because I don't know how anybody gets around it except for complete ignoring, which is helpful if you're that busy, you don't have time to look at a lot of stuff to compare. And so not just trying not to look, but you do, and you compare and you're like, well, someday, I mean, I think that's one of the big reasons I dropped obstetrics is because I was like, I can't compete when I'm sleep deprived and getting, you know, a combined 3 hours of sleep for a night and then think I'm going to be able to do anything. And I was like, I need to make a priority, you know, make choices here. And I'd rather work less, make less money and have that better balance and give myself the opportunity to do some of the other things I should be doing. Cause ultimately this is, you know, when I look back, I want to be happy with what the effort I put in. But it definitely probably pushed me into dropping obstetrics faster. So I had more time to do some of those things.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I love, you know, how you again walk through that kind of decision and the opportunity costs that, you know, like make less money, but have more time to do maybe some more of the things that you like. And that makes you a happier, healthier person in the end.
Yeah.
You said a lot of things in there that I definitely resonate with. You know, when my alarm goes off at 5 a.m, like if I don't get up, I'm not going to run, you know, during the day. So you don't have an option. And in that way, in some ways, you know, the more busy you are, then the more you actually get done.
You're not going to sit around and do this other thing. When if the alarm goes up at 5, you have to be, you know, in the car by 5:45. You have to have your bags packed because you're going to go straight from there to work. And like, there's no, you know, and so, yeah, it forces you to stay pretty regimented, which,
for sure. You also said that you, you know, you go from soccer to gymnastics practice. I wanted to talk a little bit about the athletic activities that your kids are involved in. So I was snooping on your Instagram there and I saw a video of, well, your daughter at a gymnastics meet.
Yeah.
Doing awesome on the floor, the bars, the balance beam and everything. And then I also saw a video of your son on the soccer field, just like weaving through defenders, like Lionel, like Lionel Messi, just like, you know, through like kids that some of them were like twice his height and just put the ball straight in the back of the net. And it was awesome. It was like SportsCenter top 10 highlight. So I guess like my question is, you know, how do you encourage or inspire your kids without obviously like pushing them into, you know, like a certain sport or an activity? I know you did soccer and gymnastics as you know, a kid, you said, but, you know, I don't know if you ever like hope that they get into running or what kind of your thoughts are there with you and your husband as you make those decisions.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's good combination of stuff because like you want to let them explore whatever sports they like and they want to do and they have a passion for. At the same time, I'm not becoming mommy taxi taking them to like 8 different activities they have every night and like I mean, I can't imagine having more than two children, having to coordinate even more. And so I always say that they can pick one or two sports that we will do, but they have to pick those, and they can change if they try it and they say they don't like it, then that's okay. We can, you know, kind of move on. But ultimately finding one that they really liked, I guess they both fell in love with sports that I like to do. They also like to rock climb. So my husband's a big rock climber, and he's also a hoarder. So we have a big giant, barn on our property that he built. So all of his hoarding can go in there, but that includes, he built a big giant, climbing wall. It's like 28 feet tall. He built a big climbing wall in there. So that's, Tuesday nights they go out and climb. And so they're out there rock climbing and doing that kind of stuff. So there's some non kind of organized sports that they do as well. But it's like letting them pick, but also I don't get free range. I'm not doing all the things with all the kids. I try to get them running with me. Sometimes I can get them to do a little bit, or maybe on a bike with me. My daughter's not really into it. She is more of the, she likes, you know, gymnastics, where it's a lot of power, a lot of strength, a lot of flexibility, not so much endurance. So she's not so much into it at this point. But my son, Eli, who's eight, he'll go running with me or biking with me, when it's nice outside. But I figure running, I mean, I didn't get into running till later. And so you don't need to do it early. And so I'm okay with them doing group sports, things they love, keeping them doing all the things that keep them active and healthy. And they'll eventually find what they want to do or like to do. But I don't feel the need to get them into running early. I feel like, if that's something they like to do, they'll find it. But keeping active is what's important.
Yeah. I think that's what we try to emphasize in our kids as well. Like, stay active, but also like find your passion and find, but not too much as well. Like you said, like pick one thing per season, one or two things maybe. And stick it out for the season. And then if you don't like it, choose something else. But that's
right.
Cool. All right. Well, I wanted to transition now to, you know, your race, the Black Canyon 100K, that just happened a couple weeks ago now. So you got third place, third place female. You got the golden ticket. You ran 9 hours and 6 minutes. Do you mind giving us like a brief recap of the race? And maybe if you don't mind, your coach is Megan Roche. And do you mind, you know, starting with maybe what like the conversations were with her before the race, you know, what the strategy was, or what kind of pieces of advice she was giving you, or what your goals were going in, something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I was pretty intimidated by the field, from the beginning, and, I don't know, winter training is so hard. You always feel like you're, you know, battling the weather, it's the weather, the snow, or whatever it may be, and you're like, nothing's ever ideal. It's slop, it's snowy, it's whatever. So I feel like if the workouts are very good. And so I didn't really feel all that confident going in. I think a lot of that was also really just intimidated by how deep the field was. And so kind of our pre-race conversation was like, you know, I'm not going after the golden ticket. Like, I understand like that's always like an in there goal, but like, let's be honest, like with this field, let's just, you know, I told her, I was like, I think I can run 9 hours or less. I'm going to focus on that. Like, I want to know what my splits are, so I can know if I'm on pace, and I am going to focus on running what I think I can do. And she's like, well, I think if you run what you think you can do, you can get a golden ticket. And I was like, yeah. Okay, let's talk about what paces I should be, because it was just so, I think, such a pipe dream for me that it was easier just not even to think about it, because it was too intimidating, too overwhelming. Better to just go out there and have fun and be proud of the effort I have than to be disappointed that I didn't get this thing that was going to be so difficult to do. And so we kind of worked through kind of what times I should get at each to Bumblebee, then to Black Canyon, and then Table Mesa, and then to the finish. And so kind of had that in mind, I guess going into the race, like the 2 hour delay, I found out we were still at our Airbnb. I couldn't go back to sleep at that point. Like you're just kind of up. So of course I'm like busy bodying, doing who, I think I like unloaded the dishwasher, like just stuff, you know, to busy yourself. But couldn't go back to bed. Decided to eat a second breakfast, which then I regretted because I had these awful cramps on the way to the race start. But I knew for me, because I do not do well in cold. I have really bad Raynaud's. My hands go numb. Like I don't do well in cold. I knew it was gonna be better because if it warmed up, it'd be better for me. So I was just trying to stay positive, like, it's okay. Ultimately, this will be better. I know this is weird. Hopefully your second breakfast settles. Like it'll be fine. So started, and that slop between the track and then even onto the course, and like the energy spent trying to like dodge a puddle, kind of weave around, go up, or just even just slipping every other step was so draining. And I remember just looking up and just being like, I'm gonna have to let him go because I can't keep this up and have any sort of race in the future. So there goes the race. Oh, well, here we are. So just kind of what I felt like was dogging it, just like going along. But I came into Bumblebee at like 221, 222. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm still on pace. I'm still doing okay. And I think between that and Megan and my crew just being like super supportive during that, during Bumblebee and that transition going well, I felt I was like energized coming through there and felt better than I had probably in that. The ground wasn't slipping underneath you the whole time. So felt really energized.
Did you have any idea what place you were in through that first aid station Bumblebee? So that's at like mile 19.2, I think.
So I think Megan told me I was in like fourth or fifth. And then she like sprinted up to catch up to me to be like, actually, you're in fourth or whatever it was, somewhere in that range. And I always assume people are wrong because I've always been told like, oh, you're at this place. And they're always wrong.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, okay, well, if I'm fourth or fifth, then I'm probably like actually fifth or sixth because you can miss one or two. Like, you know.
Like, right. Or so, like pacers and like other crew members running through and like men and women. Like it gets confusing. Like,
yeah. So I was like,
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, so I'm in that range. Well, that's good. Like I said, I was super shocked that I was even on pace because I felt like I was going so slow through the slop. And so I was like super stoked that I was still like, you know, not, you know, super far behind, but then also not super off pace. Cause ultimately that was still my goal. Like I'm going to do this at this time, and that's my focus. I think at that point in time, I put on a book on tape just to like give me some background entertainment. And so I was listening to that and just kind of cruising along.
What book on tape were you listening to? If you don't mind me asking.
It's this, I don't even know what it's called. It's the second book in the Fourth Wing series. So like some young adult, like pure, like romance fictiony type nice. Thing. It's not
pure
quality.
Pure distraction.
Good. Just like a story going on. Like you listen to, you know, 2/3 of it and it's really just going on. You miss parts as you're thinking or whatever. But so I think I turned that on. So I didn't hear a bunch after that. And then it was just get to your, not don't blow your quads before you get to your pacer at Deep Canyon. Yeah.
At about halfway or about mile 31.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think I had some cramps, had a bathroom stop in there. But that got better. It was a quick bathroom stop. Everything got better. Was able to keep eating and doing great in that regard.
Do you know what then, place you were in at that point at all?
No.
Or were you still that, in
I have no idea where I was at that point. Yeah.
But still on pace, still on your goal pace.
I believe I came into pace there. I think where I lost a couple minutes to get that over 6 hours, I think was between Deep Canyon and Black Canyon or somewhere in there because Table Mesa to the end, I wanted to do 147. I did 148. So I was good. So somewhere between there that I got a little bit off, but
And were you running with any other women or men during this, like, you know, were you trying to like stay with anybody? What was that like?
No,
kind of the middle part of the race.
I believe I was mostly by myself. I think I passed people every once in a while, but mostly just by myself, which
gotcha.
I always seem to end up running by myself, and it's never good because it's hard to tell your pace at that point when you're just like plugging along and you're like, oh, I could be going super fast or super slow and I have no idea, where someone's nice to have somebody. So
well, I think it can go either way. It's nice to steadily pass people as well. Like,
yeah,
just know, like, I'm running my own race. I'm on
right.
my own pace. So I think either
and
way
seeing,
is, can be helpful.
Yeah, and seeing people enough in front of me to know, A, I wasn't off course, because I am really good at getting lost. I can get lost in my own backyard. Like, I am just very good at getting lost. And so it was nice to like see everybody. Okay, at least somebody is, you know, so I know I'm not lost. But also like have a goal, like, okay, you're gonna catch them, and having kind of these micro goals in the race. So I think I was able to kind of plug along till there, got my pacer, which was super helpful just for that first big climb that you
Who
don't
your
lose
pacer?
Too much steam. Her name's Chantel. My whole crew, my pacers are all road runners. They're all very, very fast road runners. And I force them to do trail with me.
Sweet.
But they're great for workouts because they kick my butt every time. but Chantel Schultz Rathburn is her name. And so she just, like I said, helped with that, kind of just moving forward, distracting, random conversation, you know, just kind of keeping you entertained as you go. I was actually, I think, still at that point in time doing really good with fueling, getting stuff down, not having any issues. So that was good. But then I can't remember, at some point it started to really hurt. Like, I remember, was there a pretty big climb up to Table Mesa? Not like huge, but like to the point where I was like, when is this going to end? I thought we should be there by now.
Yeah. I think there was a river crossing, and you know, you go at every river crossing, you go down and then you go up.
Yeah. And so it was like a bunch of, on the river. Like, I felt like I had a whole beach in my shoes, and I was just getting a nice like sandpaper, like exfoliation. And the river crossings were freezing. So it was nice. Like, nice to have somebody to kind of go through that with. But at some point, I think we were like 10 miles in, I remember being like, hey, how far have we gone? Cause like, her watch is going to have it. And I was for certain we were at mile 15. That she's gone of the 20, and it was like mile 10, and I was like, oh god, this is never gonna end. So I think that was like the lowest point, was at that point, when then it's just like, all right, just get to Table Mesa, get to Holly with my next pacer, just get to Table Mesa, just get to Holly. It was just kind of like my mantra as I was kind of plugging through those last 10 miles then with her. And I think at that point I was not eating as much as I should have. So kind of fell off a little bit. And then definitely was not enjoying that last climb up to Table Mesa. And then when I got there, it was just like, kind of get my new pack. I know Megan said like relentless forward motion. That's what I remember her saying to me. I'm like, okay, I can do that. I can just keep moving. And then kind of took off with Holly. And there's a pretty good climb out of Table Mesa. Like, yep. I always think of Table Mesa to the end as like Batman. You go up, you go down a little bit, it's flat, you go up a little bit, and then you go down to the end, just like Batman ears. And I remember trying to mentally calculate how far that climb was in my head, like looking at the picture. Okay, so it's gotta be, so by 3 miles, and like just being like any sort of mental like ninjahood to get me through that bit, as I was like not enjoying that. I guess I think it ended up being 3 miles.
Sorry,
at one
let
point
me stop
I got
you one more time.
Yep.
Did you, at Table Mesa, did you have any idea of what place you were in, or if you were still on pace?
So I did not look at my watch, so I did not know if I was on pace or not. I just told Holly, like, an hour 45, we got to do this in an hour 45. So that's all I knew. And I did not look at my watch at that point. It was just like, and I did not know what place I was in at that point. If they told me, I did not hear. So I was not aware. And my Holly did not tell me purposefully, because she didn't want me running scared. So she knew what place I was in, but she didn't want me running scared. At some point in that first climb up, I got really dizzy, and I looked and I thought I saw a woman like right there. So I like found my electrolyte tabs, like chugged a bunch of hydration and those electrolyte tabs and was like, all right, got to keep going because I thought she was right behind me. But sometimes I'll just be like, fourth is okay or something like that. So I almost would rather not know. I'm in a much more motivated by here's how much farther it is to the end. The faster you go, the sooner it'll be done as opposed to place. Because if it's place, I'll be like, I'm okay with whatever place is left. Like I'm right. Fine. So Holly said she knew at the end, but she just didn't tell me because she didn't want me running scared. She wanted me motivated to keep moving forward. So yeah, so I believe I'd seen a girl, the girl who came in fourth, and I met her after she confirmed it was her. And so kind of saw that. I was like, oh shoot, I gotta get going. And then was able to kind of keep going. And then those last, what was it, like 3 miles from that last aid station, 4 miles from that aid station? I don't even know. It was just like, move forward, just be done. Like 3 miles isn't even a day. That's not even worth running. Like you can do this. Like just that like mental thought. My legs were obviously really tired because if you would ask me, I was going like sub 6 minute pace. I think I was going like 8 minute pace, right? Like, but I thought I was cruising. Wasn't lifting up my legs enough. I fell twice pretty good. I think I like tore some ligaments in my shoulder on the second fall. So that I was pretty painful, but just was trying to get to the end. And so that's all I was like, I need, you know, hour 45 to get to the end is all I was really thinking about during those last, you know, those last 10 mile, 11 miles. And then just finishing. So I didn't know, my pacers knew going along where I was.
Well, as we come into kind of the finish here, I wanted to take you back a little bit to some previous golden ticket races that you've been in. And let me know if I miss any here, but I counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 before this one. So you got fifth at Bandera in 2021, which at that point was still a golden ticket race.
Mm-hmm.
Seventh at the same race, Black Canyon, but back in 2022. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
16th at Canyons in 2022.
Yeah.
8th at Javelina in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And then you ran Javelina again the next year and got 4th there. So just a couple of places off of the golden ticket there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just 5-6 months ago. And then just a couple of weeks ago, now you got 3rd at Black Canyon. And that's the storyline, right? Of your race and the finish is that you didn't know, you were completely kind of taken back and surprised that you had got third, that you had got the golden ticket here. And, there's a wonderful, you know, footage of you at the finish line, just super surprised. Like you had no idea you got third. And, Craig Thornley, the race director of Western States, is the one handing out the golden tickets. And on an Instagram post, he said in a comment, I have given out quite a few golden tickets over the last 12 years, but this might be my favorite reaction of all the recipients. Lauren genuinely did not know she had earned one. So much goodness.
Yeah.
So take us through that moment of being surprised by the presentation of the golden ticket. And if you can, you know, share what that golden ticket means to you, why it's so special, as we just kind of recounted your journey through all your golden ticket races over the past 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, I guess because I've always come close, but never there, and I'm not a professional. So I'm always like really happy with how well I do lining up to so many amazing people that I'm like, oh, just happy to be there. Right. And like, I'm really happy to, you know, as this full-time working mom, to have any sort of success as far as like in top 10, I find really rewarding. So I just assumed the same, like, it wasn't like my, like I said, the beginning of the race wasn't my best. And the end, I kind of struggled. And so I assumed that I had come in fourth through seventh again, because that's what I always do. It was, you know, and he crossed the finish line, like, can I just sit down real quick? And then they came up and I was like, I don't, That's cool. Why are you bringing that over here? Like I would assume that the award ceremony already happened. And so that's why when he brought it to me, I was like, I think I cussed, which I kind of cuss like a sailor. So, I felt bad for doing that, but yeah, I was just kind of shocked. And, I think it's pretty meaningful because I, you know, feel guilty spending so much time away from my family. Poor daughter, sometimes I barely see her because I'm up at 5 a.m. leaving for a run. She's got gymnastics from 2:30 to 6:30 every night, so she doesn't get home until 7, and sometimes I'm heading towards bed already because I need to get up back up at 5 again. So it's like some days I don't even see her, like the time I don't spend with my kids, like or my husband, and I feel, you know, like that takes away from them. So to put in so much time and energy into something, and to know you've sacrificed those things and have it finally work out after several years of kind of having this pipe dream and wanting to run this race, Western States, that I thought I'd never be able to do because, you know, I'd be old before I'd be able to get in off the lottery. It's pretty incredible. Like I said, I don't think it hit me till Monday. I had surgery in the morning and then office in the afternoon, and I just sat there and just kind of like, you know, looked around my office and I was like, what just happened? And just started crying because I was just like, what? I think I texted my old coach like, am I dreaming? Like, tell me, did this just happen? Because I don't, this can't be. Just a disbelief kind of that it actually happened. And it hit me and I started crying, like, what is going on here? So it was pretty cool. Like I said, pretty rewarding after sacrificing. And I feel like being away from my kids for so much and husband and whatnot, to finally kind of achieve something that I've been going for is pretty meaningful.
Well, that's just beautiful. That's amazing. And just again, congratulations, well deserved. And you know, I think we all struggle with that a little bit as parents or as, you know, spouses, as we feel guilty for being away from our children, for doing something that, you know, is at the end of the day, like a hobby, right?
Right.
But also I like to think, you know, that it's a lot of fun and very meaningful, as you know, gives me at least a lot of purpose and motivation, and hopefully makes me a better husband, a better father, a better right. person, a better professional in mm-hmm. In my own career. So
I know my husband always says whenever I'm grumpy, he's like, will you just go for a run already? So
exactly.
Like it does make me a better person, but yeah, I mean, and that's the battle, right? Like ultimately we do this cause we love it and the community is amazing and everything's amazing, but it's hard sometimes to justify it in your head. Even if your spouse and family supports you, sometimes it's hard to justify it in your own head more than anything else.
Yeah. Well, there's a balance and there's a season to it. You know, when you're building up to a big race, there's going to be more times mm-hmm. when you're on that like really long run on the weekend, but then after the race you're, you know, recovering and not running as much.
Yeah.
But anyways, well, let's get to the end here. So there I have what I call the punchy climb questions. So just quick
okay.
hits, and some of these are from the audience, the listeners. So Cameron Hanlon asked, what is your favorite song? And he assured me that you have a really good answer to this. So
my favorite, I mean, I semi joke that any angry female song I probably like. So any like female song that's a little angry, but Lizzo is one of my favorite. Truth Hurts, I will sing that anywhere. Out loud as I can is one of my favorites.
Wonderful. Well, we won't make you sing it right now, but yeah. That's awesome. Next one, besides Western States, obviously you're really looking forward to that one. Is there a trail race you have on your bucket list?
Oh, I've got so many on my bucket list. I like to do runcations. So I pick a destination that I want to go visit and then do a trail there. And so I've always wanted to go to New Zealand. Tarawera had been on my list. And it never seems to work, whether it's you know, Black Canyons, or I did Lake Sonoma, whatever it seems to be, it always interferes. So I've got to prioritize that. But they're basically based off of places I want to go visit, and then I can do a run and it justifies going there.
Perfect. Yeah, I would love to see you toe the line at Tarawera. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean,
cool. Yeah. Okay. And then the last question that I have for you. So I want to set this up because I heard you, you know, you say this on the Plucky Not Perfect podcast a while back, that you more like listening to music or audiobooks or podcasts to distract yourself during, you know, difficult times of races.
Yeah.
I personally feel like listening, at least during workouts or races, like kind of distracts me and keeps me from going faster. But I've never tried it actually during a race, so maybe I should. But, you know, you said like in that podcast, like self-talk doesn't necessarily, you know, work for you or motivate you. So I've like, you know, asked at the end of each one of these podcasts, like what mantra works for you during the difficult times of races. And so maybe I'm operating under the false assumption that, that self-talk does work for everybody. But I guess if you had to pick, you know, a mantra or, you know, something to say to yourself, and you did mention, you said some things at Black Canyon, you know, that your coach told you, you know, keep moving forward, positive forward momentum, things like that. But anything else like a mantra or saying that serves as your headlamp, keeping with the theme of the podcast, that serves as your headlamp through the dark and difficult moments of racing or life?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest one for running, I think, is 1 mile at a time. I think a lot of times 1 mile can be really difficult and the next can be better. And you don't know the next one's going to be better until you keep moving. Sometimes, and I think I have a tendency to go pretty negative and kind of give up on myself, especially on climbs, which I'm not quite as good at. And so I kind of like, well, I'm not doing very well. Might as well just walk. I can't even do this. So that's, I think, why books on tape and audio are good, because it prevents me from going to the negative self-talk that I'm more prone to. But if I'm feeling low, I try to tell myself just like 1 mile at a time, you can get through this mile and see what the next mile holds. So I think that's the one that I go to more often than not, while running, if it's not so great and I'm able to kind of go from there, I think that's the big one I go to, just 1 mile at a time. Or sometimes like in road running, it's more like you belong at this pace. Like you can do it. You belong, you got this. So those are kind of the two that I would say I use more often.
Wonderful. Love it. Great, great words of advice there. Perfect. Well, again, Lauren, I've just super enjoyed this conversation. Yeah. So glad that I've got to know you and so exciting to see your result there at Black Canyon. And congratulations. And I really look forward to seeing you toe the line at Western States.
Yeah, I'm excited, nervous and excited.
Awesome.